What does it mean that Jesus Christ is our great high priest, the greater Moses, and the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies? The New Concordia Commentary on Hebrews is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. It's written by regular guest Dr. John Kleinig. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your pastor would deeply appreciate the New Concordia Commentary on Hebrews, 1-800-325-3040. It is a story that started, I believe, with a pro-life website. The story of Charlie Gard, an infant terminally ill, his parents desperate to seek treatment. They have procured funding for that treatment, living in England, and they are fighting a legal battle with the British government to have this child treated and not simply allowed to die. There's no guarantee that the treatment will work, but they want the opportunity to try. That story is significant enough in terms of its parental rights and perhaps even religious liberty overtones. And now President Trump has chimed in, as well as Pope Francis. And everyone's telling and reading about this particular tragedy, this particular fight on the part of these parents to give treatment to their infant son who's terminally ill. We're going to be talking about the media coverage of this British couple's battle to treat their infant son. Terry Mattingly joins us on this Thursday afternoon. He's a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
When did the media begin to take an active interest in this compelling story of Charlie Gard?
Well, you had me laughing for kind of ironic reasons during your intro there, because you've already answered your question. This was a controversy that lingered at the level of social media and some newspaper coverage on the other side of the Atlantic until the internet gods with a small g spoke the magic words Donald Trump and Pope Francis. All of a sudden, you put those names in a headline, and you're no longer, you know, a tiny item in a pro-life website that's read by, from the media's perspective, the usual suspects. There's no question that it was in the involvement of the Vatican first, then Pope Francis walking back the original Vatican statement, which tended to give quite a bit of credit to the motives of European Union and UK officials. So the Pope got directly involved and made it absolutely positively clear where they were on the parental rights issues here. And then Captain America, the tweeter, jumped in, you know, with both feet. So all of a sudden now, I think this even got a mention in the ultimate location of evening news on television, the people that never pay any attention to anything that has to do with religion. I think we can credit Trump and the Pope for putting this in mainstream American papers at this point.
What is the story itself? Outline it for those who may be only passingly familiar with the pictures they've seen scrolling through social media. And what has the media up to this point, do you think, been missing from this story?
Well, I think the key is that under British law, when push comes to shove on decisions involving what some call futile care, the state has the last call. And this is really, really interesting. Because I'm looking at this, of course, through the eyes of an American, and specifically the eyes of an American who has spent a lot of time and an entire graduate degree studying issues of church-state studies. If you looked at this through the eyes of an American, one of the first things that leaps out to you is that normally when we have parental rights issues in the United States involving children and medical care, you're usually dealing with something like a Jehovah's Witness case where the parents are attempting to withhold care in the form of blood transfusions, obviously. And the most common and the most painful ones frankly, because the Jehovah's Witnesses have done so much to cooperate with state authorities on issues related to their church-state dilemma. The really blunt and cases that just tear your heart out are when you have Pentecostal families who have a belief in faith healing alone, and thus they withhold all care from their children, believing that only prayer. This creates a tremendous collision between parental rights, religious liberty, and the well-being of the children. And this is one of the reasons why I think you've heard me say before, you have the traditional triple standard of when the state tends to become involved in religion in the United States, which is profit, and that's not the profit, it's P-R-O-F-I-T, profit, fraud, and clear threat to life and health. Clear threat. Well, you could see how that would clearly be involved in a case involving faith healing. But it takes a lot, or at least it used to. It took a lot to overwhelm, legally, the rights of parents in the raising of their children, specifically when religious faith was involved. Now, what's fascinating about this case in England is it has to do with the state overruling the parents in a case where not only do the parents want to give this child additional medical treatment, the opposite of withholding treatment, they want to give additional treatment in an attempt to save the life. That's level one. Level two, this doesn't involve the state health care system in terms of money, in the sense that the parents have raised money for experimental care that's available in the United States, and in effect, they want to take the child out of the British medical system, cease payments there by the state. They want to take that child to America for experimental treatments that they would fund themselves. Now, add on top of that, now you have the Vatican's own hospital for children offering free care. And you have Trump kind of sending a message, I don't know what we can do, but whatever it is we can do to help, we're willing to do it. We, meaning the United States, meaning he and his wife, you know, who knows exactly what a tweet means under those circumstances. So this case is really interesting in that it's the state that has said, we've determined that this case is hopeless. Thus, we recommend the child be removed from care and allowed to die for the sake of the child, for the sake of the child's quality of life, that it's suffering too much. We want the child to die and get this over with. And the parents are saying, we know there is a very slim chance that this treatment can meaningfully extend our child's life, but that's our decision. We have faith in God. We've raised money for this treatment. Please let us have our child back so that we can go to America and have this treatment. That's a pretty detailed description of where we are right now.
So you gleaned this information, obviously, from your own research. What of this, in particular, as you often say, the religious ghosts, what was missing here in much of the media treatment?
Oh, thank you. I did forget that part of your question. Frankly, once again, looking at it from our side, this looks like a religious liberty case. And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know the standing of parental rights in this case under UK law. And at the moment, UK is still in the European Union. And I believe this has gone through several courts, if I'm not mistaken, both in England and I believe one European court have already let their opinions be known that they think the hospitals and the doctors and the state officials are right and the parents are wrong, which is, it's really interesting in that you have one side arguing, we still think we can save the child's life. The state's position is, we believe it's in the child's best interest to die because of a quality of life issue. Now, this gets us into all kinds of ethical questions involving medicine, in terms of under what standards are you defining quality of life? That's not exactly the sort of thing you can measure in a test tube with absolute scientific standards. I was intrigued by a piece, which I quoted in my article at Get Religion, that ran the other day. Let me scroll down and get this called up. This was called Whose Baby is Charlie Gard Anyway? And it's an essay that ran in First Things, written by a friend of mine, Wesley J. Smith, the author of Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. And he says that this boils down to clashing moral viewpoints, and that you can see this in some earlier cases involved in what he calls futile care theory. Medical futility or futile care are the issues you'll see in medical journals, he says. And he has combined those into what he calls futile care theory. And the ultimate issue is who gets to decide that the case is futile. In this case, you have a collision between one set of doctors and state officials arguing a moral good in their eye, which is quality of life, versus parents backed by some other doctors who believe that there is some hope, not much, but some hope for a treatment to succeed in extending the child's life for some time. You have them arguing for a right to life in pretty explicitly religious terms. I think we can be assured that the Vatican is arguing this from pro-life, right-to-life terms. I think that's safe to assume at this point. So the press has this, it was like the crucial question, and it's a good one, the crucial question the press set out to explain to people was money is not the object. Because I've interacted with some people online, and one of the first things they say is, well, how long should the state of England be required to pay for this child's care? That's not the issue. The state of England isn't being asked to continue paying for this child's care. In fact, if the child was given back to the control of its parents tomorrow and allowed to go to Rome to that pediatric hospital, England wouldn't be paying for any of it at that point. The bill would be cut off. Money is not what this is about. This is a case involving precedent in a state-controlled medical system over what kind of care can be extended to infants facing what the state has already ruled as a terminal disease, whereas other doctors and the parents believe it appears to be terminal. There are cases where the following treatment has helped. We still want to try. Okay, did that answer your question? The press is missing the actual clash between these two worldviews, one of which is kind of secular moral, and the other is clearly religious Christian moral. And quite frankly, I really am curious, what's the religious liberty situation in England? Do the parents have any rights under some sort of religious liberty law or protection?
We're talking about media coverage of a British couple's battle to treat their terminally ill infant son. Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate is our guest when we come back. Wesley Smith is exactly the person to talk to here. Did Terry find that in the media or elsewhere? Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston. And they won't ask
me questions. Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Senate and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of a British couple's battle to treat their terminally ill infant son. Terry, before the break, you mentioned Wesley Smith. We've interviewed him many times over the last 20 years or so. He's exactly the kind of person the media need to talk about. Did you come across, I don't recall if you said, did you come across his evaluation of the situation in the media or on your own someplace else?
No, I did not come across this in the press. I came across this in an email from him. I mean, so this was, to be honest, a personal contact. He sent the link when this article went up at First Things. He sent the link out to a small circle of online friends who are all writers who are interested in these kinds of issues.
So why is someone like Wesley Smith, who has been writing about medical ethics for 20 years, who is an attorney and understands the law, at least in the American context, with respect to these issues, who has dealt with end-of-life issues in, I think, an expert way, why isn't he on the Rolodex? And he's, if I'm not mistaken, a deeply religious man. Why isn't he on the Rolodex of people who are covering this from American newsrooms?
Well, if I can be so bold, he's not only deeply religious, he's Eastern Orthodox. So, yeah, we're in the same camp when it comes to the ancient church teachings on these issues. He's not in their Rolodex because he's not in their Rolodex. So you can't dial a phone number if you don't know it exists. And you would have to read places like First Things in order to know that his work exists. He's in this alternative universe of niche media. Now, let me say very specifically, if this story was being covered by the religion desks at the New York Times or the Washington Post, I think you would see sources of this kind, you know, called. I think there's a chance the religious liberty question would come up, in part because in some of the coverage, we've seen comparisons to the Terry Schiavo case down in Florida. Now, that was a case of clashing privileges between Terry Schiavo's husband, who wanted care to end, and her parents, who did not. The case with Charlie Gard, there is no clashing dispute among the family over, you know, what the wishes are for the child. There's only one prevailing legal authority there, whereas in Schiavo, you had two really strong claims on her life competing, the husband versus her parents. Now, the other thing I've seen in some of these cases is I've seen comparisons to the Jehovah's Witness cases and stuff, but nobody has stopped and thought about that. Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses cases not only were medical cases, those are legendary, famous church-state religious liberty law cases. The minute you lay the lens of church-state and religious liberty on top of this case, everything changes. And I don't think, surprise, surprise, I don't think the press has seen that that ghost is there. They haven't really looked at the religious element carefully, let alone analyzed it to the depth that Wes Smith has, where to realize that what we have here is really a clash between two different moral perspectives. He quotes a case from 1993 in which you have, I'll read the quote precisely because I have it on my screen, opining that to honor the parent's desire to continue baby Terry, that was the case in this case, baby Terry's treatment, quote, would be contrary to medical judgment and to moral and ethical beliefs of the physicians caring for the patient. So, in other words, continuing treatment would be to violate the moral beliefs of the physicians, which at that point are in a direct collision with the moral beliefs of the parents. So this now fits into a larger series of questions that we're seeing lately in church state and religious liberty law. Let me just give you a famous example. I bet you could complete this sentence as a parent who lives in the culture war eras. A lot of conservative parents find it ironic that their teenage daughter cannot take a pair of aspirin at a public school without a written permit from a doctor, yet school officials can take that teenage daughter somewhere to obtain what?
A legal abortion.
A legal abortion. You have to have a written document from parental rights and a physician to take aspirin, but your state officials can override your parents' right in the life of a minor and take the daughter, the independent citizen, I guess, to an abortion clinic. We're now beginning to see the first cases where a child declares themselves to be of the wrong gender, that they perceive themselves to be of the opposite gender or of some pluriform gender, and they have that right at the public school to make that change to be recognized as such. And if the parents dispute this, I believe it's in Canada where we're beginning to see the precedent that the public school may even be able to stand with the child and take away the parents' rights to keep their child. So parental rights is emerging as a very important issue in our current church-state debates and religious liberty debates, which, of course, are two sides of the same coin.
Is there a nexus between parental rights and religious liberty? I'm trying to figure out how to ask this. Even if the parents aren't personally religious, have no religious convictions, should people of faith be concerned about parental rights as it is related to religious liberty?
Certainly. I mean, there have been cases in the past where atheist parents have taken action when their children joined against their will, joined religious groups that they considered cults, whether those were actual new alternative religious movements or whether they were just highly evangelistic churches or something like that. I've heard of parental rights cases involving children who were baptized against the will of parents after they allowed their children to go to, say, a vacation Bible school or something like that. You can certainly flip this around and try to look at parental rights from the secular side of the fence, but that frankly isn't where the action has been in American church-state law for quite some time. But you can see theoretically that might be there.
I want to come back to where we began here, Terry, and that is that when the New York Times starts writing about a story, then it officially becomes news. And the New York Times had a story on Wednesday, I believe, that was covering the Charlie Gard situation. I don't think they messed up any of the facts, but the focus was in both overt and kind of...
This would have been Monday. This was July the 3rd. I just clicked on the link and opened it up. So we're looking last Monday was when that story ran in the Times. I would agree with you that it was a quite good story, and it was lengthy, it was very thorough, and it did a tremendous job of describing the secular, legal, courts, and financial issues involved in this case. But in the words of Bill Moyers, that you and I have quoted many times, they're tone deaf to whether there is this other religious side to the case.
And would they have been writing this story at its depth and its length, as you say, with that kind of thoroughness that the New York Times is capable of executing?
Yeah.
Had not President Trump chimed in on the issue?
Well, let's take that on two levels. I think that the Pope chiming in and the Vatican Children's Hospital offering to take the child might have got it into the back pages of the paper with a wire service report or maybe a short New York Times staff report, perhaps, ironically, a story out of the Vatican Bureau, which might have dealt with the religion issues. Trump speaking out, especially by Twitter, that's page one instantly, and it's assigned to, as I often sarcastically like to say, it's assigned to the real reporters. And the real reporters are people who work politics and on the national desk. At that point, it becomes a story that's too important to be religious. And yeah, I believe that religion reporters should have been involved in covering this story at wire services, networks, and major newspapers from the get-go because of the rather obvious church-state conflicts involved.
You may have mentioned this, and I might have missed it, but has any of the coverage that you have seen on Charlie Gard actually gone and asked someone from the Church of England, an official representative of the Church of England, about the ethical questions, about the parental rights questions, about the life questions?
I have not seen that in the American press. I'll freely say that as obsessively as the British press tends to cover the Church of England, I would say the odds are pretty good that that question has been asked somewhere in the British press, but it has not turned up in Google searches that I have done. But I think the odds are good that there's a story out there somewhere with the C of E involved in some way. I will now go look for that as a part of the follow-up on this story.
So this story can end terribly. Well, it's likely to end terribly in either case, sad to say. But there can be an outcome to this story in which, as you have said, Charlie Gard is allowed to travel to the United States and his parents are allowed to procure, funding it themselves, this treatment that they so desperately desire for him.
Don't forget the Vatican.
Yeah.
I would say at this point, I don't know the faith identity of the parents, but I would say at this point the odds would be better that the child would be released to go to the Vatican Pediatric Hospital. But I don't know where the better doctors are. It could be because they have been trying so hard to line this up for treatment in America that there might be all kinds of files and tests and materials already in America that are not in Italy. But if you're looking for a dramatic, positive end to this story, it's the child goes to the Vatican. Can you imagine the coverage if the parents and the child are visited at the hospital by Pope Francis? You know, and then maybe the child responds to treatment, maybe the child doesn't. But the parents' ability to control and be with their child through these final stages of its life would then be present. And I think a lot of people would consider that a sad but positive end to the story, as opposed to this horrible separation we have right now and the parents not having any control over the situation at all.
What is the biggest question you want to see answered on this story from the American media as they tell it?
Well, I'm selfish at this point. I really would like to know the differences between American church-state law and British. I've seen references in the stories to clashes between American law and British law are in play. In journalism, we have what's called a sidebar, which is where you admit that the main story has kind of a technical question, that for people to truly understand the story, they need 6 to 8 inches of specific information to help understand it. I would like to see a sidebar by a really good religion reporter that briefly explained why these British parents don't have parental rights in this case, whereas in America, it's more likely that they would. that may require calling one or two church state experts in both locations, but I think that could be done.
I just have one more question for you. It's not so much related to this, but just to kind of generally in the media, at this particular snapshot in American life, we have the gravitas of the New York Times brought to bear earlier this week in this story that I think is highly consequential as Terri Schiavo was. And then at the same time, we have network broadcasting in what can only be called childish spats with the American presidency. You see almost kind of the best that the American media can be and new lows being reached in what they often prove to be. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, there's a perfectly good PhD dissertation in communication theory out there somewhere. I mean, when you begin to consider how many Twitter or media mentions we have of CNN blackmail, hashtag CNN blackmail, or, I mean, the fact that the president of the United States, the current president of the United States, is involved in video footage from a professional wrestling SmackDown, I mean, stop and think about that for a second. I mean, there's something that probably you wouldn't have seen with Richard Nixon or any other troubled presidents or even a glowing positive president. Yeah, try to picture Eisenhower involved in a world wrestling video fight. What a world. And Trump specifically argued that his tweets lately of this nature have not been presidential. They've been reality modern presidential, or what was the exact phrase, but that was the idea. This is how the modern presidency functions. And you know what's really sad about that? That's probably true in terms of the power of reality TV in large parts of America and the Twitterverse that then spins out of it. He might be speaking the truth. And if so, that's an even more depressing thought to add to all of this.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Folks, Christian engaging the news media will be one of the topics addressed by Mark and Molly Hemingway at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. Attendance at the conference is limited to 400. You'll find a list of other topics and speakers and a way to register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. It's the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas, November 10th and 11th. Register at issuesetc.org. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Cal Beisner joins us. We're going to be talking about the refusal of climate change scientists to publicly debate the issue with those who would question the human origins of climate change. Then we'll be spending some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer in our series Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Isaiah 26, "You keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee." That's Hour 2 of Issues Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.